This episode is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Radio Meters program.
Hello, you are tuned into Research Review on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territory of the Musqueam people at UBC. My name is Alirad Amari, and I'm joined by my co-host today, Gurman Gill. Each week on Research Review, we interview a researcher who is affiliated with the UBC community and discuss some of their latest work and findings and how they relate to broader issues in society. Today, we'd like to welcome Dr. George Béliveau to Research Review on CITR 101.9 FM. Dr. Béliveau is department head and a professor in UBC's Department of Language and Literacy Education and also cluster lead of the research-based theater cluster. So thanks for joining us today.
Delighted to be here.
So Gurman, do you want to start us off with some questions?
Yeah, could you maybe start by telling us a bit about your educational path and what sort of led you to like research-based theater as a field?
Sure. So if I take a few steps back, and I did an undergraduate degree in acting and theater at Dalhousie University. So I trained to be a professional actor, performer, which I did pursue at different points in my life. But immediately after my acting degree, I jumped into a teaching degree, which allowed me to work in secondary schools mainly to teach theater, English, and French. So the passion for theater was able to be spread in a more pedagogical way, which then led to a master's and a PhD, a master's at University of Toronto, where I was able to continue the pursuit of theater as a discipline, as an academic discipline, but also to really start thinking about who are the thinkers applying theater in educational contexts. And so that I continued to teach and to do theater-based work, and led me to do a PhD, which I did at the University of British Columbia. And my PhD at UBC was very much in a theater-oriented way, but during my whole time at UBC, I was also thinking about how is theater not only an art form, but how is it a way of thinking about pedagogy across the curriculum. And the leap to research-based theater, so that's the very quick synopsis of the kind of academic side of things. I think the leap to research-based theater was that I began to meet a lot of people across campus who were doing these fascinating research projects that seemed to have an element that could be brought to life with the assistance of theater. So as examples would be that people doing work in communities such as a project that I've been involved in for some years with returning military veterans who were transitioning from having been in the military to civilian life, and their stories were very compelling. Their stories of healing, but also their stories of service, their stories of different challenges that they face. So how can we collaborate with people working in counseling, psychology, and military veterans? How do we bring that to life through theater? So that's the journey of having worked now with a number of different researchers in different areas who might benefit from using theater as an art form, but also as a way of knowledge mobilization.
Yeah. So maybe could you explain to our viewers a bit more about research-based theater? I know I didn't hear the term until I read you guys' website, and I don't think it's something a lot of UBC students are familiar with.
Right. Yeah. So research-based theater in a nutshell would be the application of bringing research to life that is either, it could be data from in the social sciences, it could be data in even some of the hard sciences, but it's honoring that data, working closely with a researcher in that area or a group of students, a lab, and then using the affordances of theater or the how could I say the techniques of theater so that it comes to life by not only a theater way, but it has to honor, if it's a community that theater might not be on a stage, it might be in a more public venue. So then the adaptations of the theater methods would have to be in sync with the research context.
Okay, so I guess there'd be like lots of maybe qualitative data from interviews that you may want to like put to life through research-based theater.
Yeah, so I think that's what certainly the interviews, but interviews are often done, let's say, one-on-one. So then we go, okay, well, that can be all these monologues. So do we do group interviews to generate some dialogue? And then we often would create what's called composite characters, so that even though the data was from 50 different people, or, you know, depending, some research studies are very extensive, it could be represented by a few characters that have different characteristics of those different voices. And there's a huge code of ethics as well of doing this kind of work as well. The permission to use the work that someone who does an interview for a particular research project might not think that they're then going to be, their voice is going to be embodied into a character on stage. So we have to be really mindful of each step of the way of this kind of work as well.
That's interesting. We'll be right back here on Research Review after one short message.
We don't need to tell you that Vancouver has a housing problem.
Mass evictions.
Mass rent evictions.
Unfair rent increases.
What happened to rent control and protection from unfair eviction?
If these or other housing matters concern you, you may be interested in joining the Vancouver Tenants Union. For more information, visit tenantsunion.ca.
Definitely. And, you know, I was going a bit through your body of work. One thing that caught my attention was a book that you co-authored about a year ago, back in 2020, that was titled Contact Unloaded, Contact followed by an exclamation mark, Military Veterans, Trauma, and Research-Based Theater. So I took a quick look through the book, and pretty interesting what was going on in there overall. And just tell us a bit about the work you've done with military veterans, because I find that pretty interesting.
Sure. And I think hopefully that project is one of those that is really showcases the interdisciplinarity and also the community outreach, which theater at its core was really about reflecting voices of a particular community. And of course, theater has escalated in certain contexts as being quite an elitist approach, and people may choose to go to the theater or not because they kind of go, well, I can't access that that language, I can't access the funding to go. And so Contact Unload, I think, brings theater back to, let's say, a little bit to the people. But it also shows that to be a performer is also part of a spectrum. So we had some people with theater experience in the project, but most of them were participants. They were actually military veterans themselves. And so their stories, sometimes they embodied their own stories, but often it would be the stories of others, some of their colleagues, some of their peers, but there was always a part of them that was in the story. So that book that UBC Press was generous enough to publish, that highlights the voices of the veterans who participated in the project, the psychologists, the counselors that participated in the project, the artist, and then a number of voices from audience members who witnessed the play. And that play kind of had a long life. It's still ongoing, in fact. So after 4 or 5 years, it's probably been performed as a large piece 30 or 40 times, but then now we have the Unload, which is a shorter version of it, or a streamlined version of it, which continues to have a bit of a life.
Now, just one question about the book's title, Contact Unload. What does that refer to specifically?
So, and I'm glad that you mentioned the exclamation
mark. Yes.
I can't read it right now. So yeah. And, So that came about, any title, it takes a long time to come to a title. And so it has several connotations. And if I can remember the various discussions, contact is a term that military veterans like to be like, there's contact, there might be enemy in place, so that everyone's like contact, so they have to be alert. So there is an exclamation mark to it. The unload part of it is part of the therapeutic process of these veterans unloading some of the trauma that they might have experienced. And the approach that we built the play on is the work of my colleague Marv Westwood, who does what's called therapeutic enactment. And the play actually shows scenes where veterans and or civilians will go through a process where they go back to that place of hurt, and they replay the scene, which in theater you would never do that without the help of counselors there. So we did that kind of work in the building of the play, but it was mimicking a lot of what the veterans themselves had gone through in order to begin the healing process. So the unloading is unloading of some of the trauma, but it's also a military term, like the unload your weapon, unload, which you typically wouldn't do in battle, or you might do. So there's a bit of nuance in the title. So there's kind of oxymoron of contact, unload.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting title. Like, I can't, you know, put my finger on it, but there's something about it that's really just captivating when I see it. It kind of like just draws me in, you know. It's very catchy.
Yeah.
I like it.
And it came from some of the transcripts. And it came, some of the words were like contact was often in the contacting one another. The approach is you actually touch each other. Mm-hmm. Pre-COVID, you would, and it's a very male-centric piece, because it was about, we were funded by Movember Canada, which is men's health. And, sorry, I cut you off.
Yeah, my interpretation of unload would be, if you're contacting an enemy, you might want to unload your clip, or just pretty much just shoot all your ammo at the enemy. That was sort of where I was going with that.
And often
go ahead.
Yeah. But as you say that, the enemy sometimes in this case is within, right? The when you're dealing with trauma and revisiting. So yeah.
I can sort of see how research-based theater would be really good for like the social sciences and psychology and history. But you also mentioned that it could be in some circumstances good for the hard sciences. And I was wondering what that might look like.
So one of our projects that we're also working on that has been presented and performed a few times, you might have seen it it's on our website. It's called Treading Water. So that's with chemical and biological engineering. And it's a large project that a colleague at UBC, Majid Massoni, is involved in, called Réseau. And Réseau, O is E-A-U, as in water. And what Majid and his team do is that they try to bring clean drinking water to remote communities, mainly remote communities. A lot of them indigenous communities and a lot of them in BC. And so that project, Majid and I met at the Peter Wall Institute. We were both scholars in residence the same year. And one of the goals of the Peter Wall Institute is interdisciplinary research, but it's also connecting us across campus, that we are certainly all doing unique things, but how can we come together to resolve complex problems? And so how did Majid and I come together? Well, the story in his case, in engineering, they have to have the really understanding of the mechanisms of how do you take non-potable water and transform it through things that I have no idea to understand how they can bring that water and make it into a drinkable water. But that whole mechanism of the engineering of that is one aspect. But then the next aspect is, how do you bring that to a community that they can trust that the engineers from UBC or the government is bringing in this so-called fresh water, there's a whole translation. How do you relate to the community? And Majid's work is certainly an understanding of the engineering of it, but his work is also about how do we bring that to the community? So that's where we came in with doing theater-based work, sometimes in workshop capacity, but also and then collecting stories of some of the communities that had worked with Majid and Rizzo, and how do we bring that then into a theater piece? So, because the theater piece then becomes a conversation starter, and it also honors the stories of the people, but hopefully in this case also honors the engineering feat that some of these people are doing.
That's pretty cool. So it like sounds kind of like a science communications piece, right? You know, really trying to like connect with the public about what's going on, right?
Yeah.
It's definitely sometimes good, you know.
The veterans piece. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was saying, like, it's definitely good these days, especially when you look at like the hard sciences. There is that like sort of like disconnect and sometimes even distrust between like the public and scientists and researchers. So, you know, accessible forms of informing the public like this can be really helpful. So we'll be right back here on Research Review after one short message. So just stay tuned.
At the count of three, imagine yourself in your ideal place of relaxation. One, two, three.
Spit in your ear.
Oh,
C. And this is IET.
R.
101.9 FM.
You're listening to Research Review on CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Alirat, and along with my co-host Gurman, today we are interviewing Dr. George Beliveau. So far we've talked about Contact Unloaded, his recent book, and how research-based theater ties into that. So Gurman, I think you had a question.
I noticed on your project website that you mentioned that research-based theater encourages researchers to find creative ways of also collecting and analyzing data. So I can understand how research-based theater can help people present data, but I was wondering how it affects the data collection process.
Mm-hmm. Good question. And I think one of the things that we really want to do is to think about this as a methodology, not only a form of dissemination or knowledge mobilization. So let's say even with this, if I stick with the veterans project and the water project, with the veterans, in order to gather some of their stories, certainly you can do an interview, not unlike what we're doing here right now, is kind of asking questions. But what we wanted to do as well was use theater forms to begin to build a community with the group of veterans that volunteered to be part of the piece. So through using theater techniques, so we used a lot of nonverbal stuff to begin with, which seems bizarre to think of using the nonverbal to create a script. But in the nonverbal, the body, like creating frozen images or tableaus of particular moments of, let's say, of fear or of celebration or whatever it might be. In doing those, the veterans would put themselves in particular moments, and then we would just freeze there. And then there's theater techniques where you tap someone on the shoulder and you say, okay, what are you thinking at the moment? Or where are you at in the moment? And then a whole story starts to emerge by doing a frozen image of fear or happiness or whatever it might be. And those, so it begot stories of them serving mainly in Afghanistan. Some served in Cyprus and in other conflicts. But the story started to emerge, and then conversation started to happen. So it was using these theater techniques as a way to elicit stories. and in a way that hopefully was playful, in a way that was also embodied, so it wasn't just in the head. And also the theater activities in this case with the veterans allowed for, these are physical individuals, and it allowed us to move around. And if we ever got stuck in a place where it felt maybe a little traumatic, we could kind of release some of that tension. So that's a collection way. And then the analysis, that's a little bit more complicated, right? When you start thinking, okay, but the analysis I think came in when we would play out, if we broke into different groups, there might be one group working on a particular element and another group there. Then we would kind of show it to one another and then go, oh, this is how we arrived at this. Because we used Shakespeare a fair amount in the Contact Unload, the original versions, looking at Prince Hal, Prince Henry's speech in Henry V, where it's about going to war is like a glorious thing. Like when you come back, you can tell everyone that you fought in the Battle of Agincourt, and in which these veterans were going, well, actually going to fight was a huge risk. And then when you come back, then you carry all the kind of the baggage of what you experienced. So the Shakespeare piece was a way of us kind of responding to some of the work. But anyway, all that to say, when you start comparing the different scenes and then you start trying to synthesize what was learned in this one, what was learned in this one. And so that's a form of analysis of looking at using theater as a form of where does the truth resonate? And of course, it resonates differently at all times. But we could start cycling through a lot of different pieces, and through the cycling of the kind of exploring and then the writing of the scenes, we started editing out and getting to what we would call the essence of the stories. And as we would throw it out to other veterans, they would go, oh, I connect with this, or I connect with that. And I think all our pieces of research-based theater have been continually built from responses from stakeholders or people who know about that particular phenomenon. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I feel like the data collection process, especially for like Contact Unloaded, would be really good as a method of like psychotherapy, for example. It feels like it has a lot of applications in other fields.
Yeah. Can I ask what both your fields are in? I know we're on the radio here and it's supposed to be about research-based theater, but I think I'm getting a sense that you're both very quite knowledgeable about different areas, but I'd be curious to know what areas you're engaged in.
So Gurman, you want to go first?
Yeah, we're both life science students. Yeah. I'm more on the human physiology sort of side.
And I'm more on environmental sciences.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. And both at what level in your programs?
Yeah, I'm graduated.
He just graduated this year, and I'm on my final year doing my honors thesis.
Okay, great.
Yeah, part of the reason we started this podcast is that we can get an idea of all like the research happening outside of our faculty bubble. Like, I am very familiar with all the research going on in the physiology department, mostly because a lot of them are my teachers and we talk to them quite a bit. But I have no idea what's happening in anthropology, for example, or if I didn't seek you out particularly, I would have never heard about research-based theater. And I'm sure a lot of people in my faculty would have never heard about research-based theater if I wouldn't talk about it on air.
Definitely. Before you asked us, what would you have guessed that we studied?
Well, the kind of questions you were asking, I was very impressed in terms of your understanding of, it could have gone both ways, either even in social sciences or in a more science, applied science side. Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah, because and before the interview, I should say that I did skim through the book Contact Unload. Gurman did some research on some other parts of the work you've done as well. So we did come in with some background knowledge so that we wouldn't be completely confused.
Right.
Yeah.
And I should say like other fields as well, like research-based theater kind of is a term that's used by some researchers. It's a lot in the health sciences. There's a group in at York University that started using that term, and a lot of this work is done in nursing. It seems that the health sciences have really embraced using the arts as a form of representing their data and trying to disseminate it to kind of get to the public, to so that public is not just seeing a PowerPoint or reading a research article. They can kind of feel, I mean, we talk about this in research-based theater, is that we're trying to bring the human back into the research, because sometimes when we do research, we try to do all these codes and different things, which is, you know, really important, because it's maybe generalizable, it's credible, it's or all the terms that we want to use. But then what we try to do with that is go, well, how can we then bring it back to a human scale, so that an audience member who might not be an academic in that area may be able to say, okay, I really hear what you're saying. So, and I see where I see those results, and I see why research matters, because it I can connect to it as a human being. So, but there's other terms that people use for like there's a word, ethnotheater is used in certain areas, and it's kind of similar to what we do. We kind of moved away from ethnotheater simply because sometimes we don't do ethnography, and the ethnotheater is very built into ethnography, because some of the projects, that's not the methodology that you would use.
It's pretty interesting with the whole like communicating with the public piece, especially that you mentioned like health sciences, because, you know, I'm thinking about like a lot of what's going on right now, you know, COVID-19 vaccines, just in general, like, you know, confusion, anger, distrust among certain segments of the population as well. Like, one thing that, you know, as a pastime, sometimes I like to go and browse conspiracy websites just to see what they're up to, like conspiracy theories. And I guess one of the most bizarre things I saw recently was that someone had said, oh, if these vaccines work, if the scientists, you know, are saying that these vaccines work, then why are people who are vaccinated still testing positive for coronavirus? And, you know, I'm just thinking to myself, like, no one ever said that this vaccine, you know, was 100% effective. No one ever said that. Like, it's always been like, oh, 90-something%, 80-something% effective. So for someone to like think that, oh, you know, because like this is happening, this means that like this is completely moot is interesting. So,
yeah. I was going to say that I know people don't always respond to like stats and big data as well as they could like anecdotes. So I feel like that's where a lot of that misinformation comes from. They're more likely to respond to something more emotional than hard data. And I think that's a gap where research-based theater could fill.
Yeah, and I think that we try to always make it into a combination of both, because it we don't want to make it too emotional. And actually we sometimes tread that point that it gets, you know, it gets really dramatic. We have too many artists involved, and I love working with artists, but their goal is to create this compelling piece of fiction sometimes, or of that the audience is really going to connect with. And I have to say, as an actor who performs quite often in these, sometimes I go, okay, I really got to get into the role. And I realize, well, wait a second. No, I've got to not get too much into the role, because the information or the data that the researcher has brought to there, we have to make sure that we honor that. And actually, that's an example. We worked on a piece called Dark Secrets, which is it's something like 500 or 600 testimonies of residential school survivors. Grant Charles in social work was the PI on that project, and had all this data with a number of Indigenous scholars that had brought all these stories to life. And we were working with mainly social work undergrad students, a few grad students in social work that were working through the testimonies and trying to synthesize common themes, et cetera. And then as the artists and them, we were working to try to create a piece of theater, which ended up being called Dark Secrets. And for a while, like one of the drafts we brought in, Tetsuro Shigematsu, which is one of the main artists working on this project, is a Governor General shortlisted playwright. His plays have been toured across the country. So his draft, when he came in with it, was super theatrical. And I have to say, when I read it, I was like, whoa, this is like, you really captured a lot of it. But there was a sense from the researchers and from community members that maybe it went almost too far on the artistic side. So it's that kind of sense of give and take, right? And I think for that piece, we needed to kind of scale back to where the data, closer to the data, and let the art maybe emerge as we progress. So, and really coming back to the point about the conspiracy theorists and stuff, and I think what theater hopefully does is that by presenting characters, we're also fallible, right? We are, if you think of Shakespeare's characters, they're always, there's some kind of flaw within it. And because we're so complex, like we feel this way today, tomorrow might be different. And so hopefully by bringing a human dimension to some of the data, we go, well, we do have doubts about this, and it's never just one line or another line. So hopefully the audience, and if the scripts are, and the performances are porous, and I use that quite deliberately, we need to create something in the script that's porous enough for the audience to enter into the story, to see partly themselves, but also to see the, yeah, but the maybe. If we don't kind of deliberately put that into the script, then it's like a lecture. It's like, this is the Messiah saying, this is what it is. There's no place for engagement, right?
Mm-hmm. We'll be back here on Research Review after one short message, so please stay tuned.
Are you one of those, I really want to make a podcast? People? Well, we've got a huge opportunity to share with you. StoryHive is giving away 10 grants of $10,000 each to aspiring podcasters in BC and Alberta. Since 2013, TELUS StoryHive has funded and supported emerging creators with mentorship and guidance from the National Screen Institute, bringing hundreds of creative Western Canadian projects to life. This time, they're taken to the airwaves with their inaugural podcast edition, dropping on November 4th. StoryHive is looking for original nonfiction podcast concept pitches from BC and Alberta residents. Make sure you apply before December 2nd at storyhive.com, and you could get $10,000 to get your podcast off the ground. That's storyhive.com for all the details.
You are listening to Research Review on CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Alirod, and along with my co-host Gurman, today we're interviewing Dr. George Beliveau about research-based theater. So, Gurman, you had a question.
Yeah. When you're developing a play for research-based theater, is there ever like a target audience you wish to address, or is it just like reach as many people as possible? You don't care who.
Yeah. Super important question, because from the get-go, you have an idea of, okay, this is the target audience that we'd like to hit. Like, let's say with a veterans project, we wanted to hit veterans who might be out there who have not sought help yet, who are hurting in some ways. So great, you start developing, that's your audience. But then there's a whole marketing side, like how do you bring them to theater, which this in this case might be an audience that would not necessarily want to go to the theater. But I think you kind of make a, we typically try to go, okay, this is the audience we'd like to reach, but now I've been doing this long enough that sometimes, you know, it's going to shift. And we do know in general that it's going to meet a particular audience, but I'm always surprised of actually who actually comes. But, and that's often dictated by your funding model, the timeline. So we bring often pieces to conferences, but again, to a conference, who at the conference, it will be more graduate students that are going to come? Will it be community members that are invited to the conference? So it's such a moving target. And one with the health sciences typically do better, because sometimes they will bring it to a, they will bring it to rounds in the hospital where doctors or nurses are. So they try to control a little bit the audience, or they have a bit of control over the audience. But that's critical. And one of my recent a PhD student that I'm co-supervising, Jenica Nichols, has been doing a lot of work on audience feedback and how do you get the audience to do something with what they've seen as well, which is super important. So, but you need to get the people that you wanted to get there somehow.
Yeah, how was COVID and like Zoom theater affected marketing and audience feedback?
The incredibly creative people have continued to do another project that we're the research-based theater collaborative is doing is called Alone in the Ring, and that's based on data of people who live with some form of disability. And that work in healthcare, and their piece has been performed many, many times live, but several times on Zoom. And they've used the tools of this medium that we're on right now, of Zoom, to play with vlogs. They've kind of done some pre-recorded stuff. They play with the chat. So they haven't slowed down that particular group. I would say some of the other projects, we've just not been able to adapt the format of the script to an online component for various reasons, sometimes for ethical reasons. But it's theater is meant to be live, in my view, most theater, and you breathe the same air as the people in the space. There's a sense of connection that happens in the theater that's hard to do over Zoom, mm-hmm. but it has persisted somehow.
Is there like research from a particular faculty at UBC that you would want to see get more involved in research-based theater?
I'm always excited to hear about different areas. I think the one that I've been percolating that I'd like to keep in mind is something about the environment and energy. The way that we consume energy consumption. And I think, again, I mean, we hear a lot about global change and we've been talking about that for a long time, but it's so present, as we know, right? And so I'm hoping that might be a piece that we're going to be working on with partners that have data or are interested in maybe developing further data around energy or climate change.
That's pretty cool you mentioned that. Actually, last term I took a course called ENVR410, Energy, Environment, and Society.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, who was teaching it?
It was Amanda.
Did you Jiang. Remember the instructors?
Yes, Amanda Jiang.
Okay.
Yeah, we had her on the podcast a while
back.
Yeah,
we had her a few episodes ago. I think it was our sixth episode or something. So, yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah, and then a lot of the work that we're doing now too is we're trying to reach out because we have about 100 or so people that are part of the cluster, and many of our partners are international or are starting to kind of do work in their communities, from Hong Kong to Australia to New York to Spain and everywhere in between. And so I'm really excited to hear about how they're using the methodology. How is place affecting it? Does the institution recognize this as well? Because we're dealing with a lot of academics that have to publish. How does a piece of research-based theater look on your CV? Does it matter? We use Stephen Heatley, who's the head of the theater department, theater and film. We'll talk about, you might get 3 or 4 people sometimes reading a journal article, but he has some people in his faculty that might have developed a play, might have had like 3,000 people sit and weep with a particular piece of theater. And really, you know, so how can, what are the metrics of this kind of work? How can we help one another, people who kind of play with the borders of what is academic research and what is academic impact? Output, what does that all mean? So I think we're at a really exciting time for people that are trying to think outside the box.
Yeah. how could like new researchers get involved in research-based theater? So either as like a research lead or maybe even like as an undergrad who's not really involved in research at the moment.
We're trying to find, like, I think researchers, let's say other faculty members or even PhD students, master's students, tend to, they might have seen one of the events that we're doing and then they're going to go, oh, how about, would this make sense? So it's a little bit more accessible to them. Or if they just come across the website, or if they come across one of the events, as I said, a little bit more difficult for undergraduates. And I'm really interested in, certainly when people like yourselves and others who are, they're doing honors theses and they're you're really starting to think about, okay, where do I want to go next? So how can we kind of excite or attract third and fourth year students, let's say, who are really trying to focus on a particular discipline, and they've kind of arrived somewhere. We haven't done so well in doing that. Some of them happen to know because one of their professors is linked to something, and then they'll hear about it, or they might make it part of their course. So if you have ideas in terms of how we could really reach the, I mean, we have a lot of undergraduate students here at UBC. So there's a huge, and I don't want to call it market. I think it's just, how can we pique their interest so they can think themselves, like what they can imagine different things.
Yeah. I know you guys have some intro workshops going on. Do you know, what did those look like?
Yeah, those have been, we usually attach them sometimes to a symposia that we're holding. And they are usually more, we try to target them. It's a faculty member working in a particular department saying, we've got a bunch of students, can you work with them? We haven't really been successful in reaching a broad call of that we would get students from a whole bunch of different disciplines at the undergraduate level. The graduate students that are involved are quite vast from different disciplines. I have to say that I think we've hit the interdisciplinarity at the graduate level. So maybe it's what you're suggesting is those intro workshops. We have to find ways to attract undergraduates better.
Well, we're running out of time here now, but it looks like hopefully this might be one way we can attract some UBC students. I know we have a few listeners that happen to be undergrads.
Yeah.
So, yeah, how can people get in contact with research-based theater?
Probably the best way is the website, which you just Google or whatever platform you use as a search engine, shouldn't privilege Google here, UBC research-based theater. And I have a couple of coordinators that are working with this cluster, which I want to recognize the vice president's office has been very generous to keep funding this cluster. And hopefully we've done them well by doing a lot of great work. So they can undergraduate students can reach out there. And yeah, we're going to be holding different events in the fall, probably still through Zoom because of uncertainty of where things are at, but also to kind of also be able to bring in some of our international collaborators. But we'll be looking at particular topics in the fall, and we're hoping to have more workshops that are specific to, we're trying to develop one, let's say right now, on how to use objects or things in a piece of research-based theater. So it's not only text. And so we'll be advertising some of those on our website.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for coming on. I'll definitely look forward to some of the events you guys have in the fall.
Great. Good. Well, thanks for inviting me. And
yeah,
it's lovely to be part of your program, and you're doing great stuff. I did check in to other episodes that you've had in the past too, so this is really important stuff.
Yeah, thanks again for joining us and taking the time to do this. This concludes Research Review on CITR 101.9 FM. Today's interview was Dr. George Beliveau, a department head and professor in UBC's Department of Language and Literacy Education. And the book that we were talking about was called Contact Unload, Military Veterans, Trauma, and Research-Based Theater, in case you're interested in that.